When you think of stories, you might imagine the short clips on your social media friends' pages. But there are other stories waiting to be told. We all have them. They are the pieces of the puzzle that put the whole picture together. Today on The Queso, please welcome Amanda Delheimer, the artistic director at Second Story. For years, Second Story has been known for its wonderfully creative spaces where people came together and told their stories in such a way as to invite others into the narrative. Truly an immersive and unforgettable experience. And now, Second Story is transforming workplace cultures with authentic storytelling experiences. This long-established Chicago theater company has evolved into Culture Builds, a suite of professional development opportunities from equity, diversity, and inclusion training to team building and student workshops. Learn more at culturebuilds.com and at secondstory.com. That's 2ndstory.com. And please remember to follow The Queso on Instagram at THE.QUESO. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to be here. It's always lovely to be in conversation about things that we feel passionate about. So I'm really thrilled to be here. My name's Amanda. So I'm the artistic director of a place called Second Story. And we believe that stories are the thing, right? They're the thing that tie people to each other. They're the thing that help us expand our brains and our hearts. And I came to it really through theater. I actually have a degree in environmental science, but the work study job that I got in college was at the student run theater. And it was really through that experience that the theater got its hooks in me in terms of the way that it builds community and connects people just kind of in the space together, whether that's physical or in the story. And so that was really my entry point into the work that I do right now. And I feel very grateful for it, partially because I grew up in a family that is very closed. Like, we don't really talk about feelings. We don't really share big emotions with each other. And so I really feel like I had an aha moment, you know, as a young person around the work that theater can do and the work that stories can do and the work that sharing those with each other can do. So that's really how I came to the work that I do now.
That's great. You know, and I have been years ago to a Second Story, like, I don't want to say event. It was kind of like a, kind of like an open mic, but it was more like, it was already prepared. There was already stories that were curated for the night.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. It was so much fun.
Do you remember where it was?
I don't remember where it was. I know it's like probably like Wicker Park area, somewhere there.
But maybe Webster's Wine Bar. Was it up like a staircase in kind of a wine bar sort of place?
It was a wine bar. Yes.
Yeah. That's where we got started.
It was close quarters, tight space, RSVP. And it was so great to see that many people interested. And like just personal stories. I mean, these were just people telling their story in really creative ways. I think one of my friends was one of the storytellers that day. I think, I don't know if you've ever heard of Diana Pando. She's been around for a while. Okay.
Yeah.
So she was one of the featured readers that day. And a bunch of us went to support her. So yeah, small world, right?
I love it. Well, and the word that you used, curated, I think, is a really good, it's like a really good hook for some of the way we think about stories and the idea that, I'll say a lot, like all stories are valuable. Stories are what make us who we are. It's what our identity is. It's what our culture is the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves. And also some stories make better theater, right? Or some stories are easier for me to connect with the person. And so we spend a lot of time really thinking about that curation piece, like what is the story that, you know, Amelia wants to tell, and how do you craft it in such a way that anybody can enter into it and really have an experience with you, as opposed to like sometimes like I can imagine, you know, I'm not a mom, and sometimes talking to mom friends, I'm like, oh, I'm having such a hard time entering into your story. Like, it feels like I don't feel like I have access to it. And so how do we use craft? How do we curate them so that anybody can enter into the story and really see themselves in that human experience?
And I think a lot of it begins with our, just what's going on in our mind and the quirkiness, craziness that we're thinking up before stuff even happens and as it's happening. And that's like, I feel like that's where the story is. I had an article that I wrote years ago about, I used to take the Metra, and I had to get on at Cicero before it was remodeled. And I always felt like people looked at us like weird as we got on, because it was the Cicero stop, right? And so I had this story about how I felt like people were suspicious of me because I got on at Cicero. And it was all in my head, of course. But that's part of the storytelling, is getting inside people's brains and maybe either calming some fears or just helping to explain what you're thinking is not bad, but maybe try to look at it another way.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's such a wonderful example, because of the idea that I'll say a lot, that we all only have our own one singular point of view, right? And my point of view is one of 7 billion in the world, right? So not only does that old adage of like, oh, you're unique and you have unique things to contribute, is absolutely 100% true, because nobody is the same. We've all had different life experiences. And also, I only live in my own mind, right? And so your experience of like, wow, I feel really judged. I feel like people are looking at me and thinking about these things. And they might be looking at you and being like, oh, she looks so put together. And, you know, like, they might be having this totally different experience that we don't have any access to. And that is exactly where stories give us an entry point, right? This idea of like, I need access to what's going on underneath that, because otherwise I'm just layering my own point of view and my own experience onto what I think or assume or guess is happening.
Right. Which, you know, some woman on the train could be thinking, did I leave my curling iron on?
Yes. Right. And then she's making some face and you're like, oh God, do I smell? Right. And she's just like, I bet my house is burning down.
Right. And so like, the work that you're doing right now, and the reason that we're talking, because it caught my attention about the power of storytelling to disrupt the status quo. And you're talking to businesses in general, employers, right? Or who exactly is your audience when you go and do these things, when you put something like this together?
Yeah, so Second Story began as a theater company, right? So we were making performances. And we found, even in the very beginning, like back when you were there, probably, you know, 10, 12 years ago, people would come up afterwards and be like, oh, well, you know, do you do corporate events? Or, hey, would you do a training in this? And at the time, we're like, you know, scrappy young artists. We're like, sure, yeah, we'll do that, no problem. And over time, realized that, like, oh, no, actually, we have assets that we can offer to the world, right? And whether it's a school, so we'll do like in-school programming that is very creative, you know, like an in-school residency. We'll also do work with a group of teachers, do some TD work that is about, you know, bringing in a story about somebody's school experience when they were a kid, and then working through the layers of what's happening and how could a teacher interact with that student in a different way. So in terms of our audience, it's in some ways a poor marketing tool, but like it works for everybody, because stories are a human, something that all of us are attracted to. And so like the event that you're talking about that's tomorrow with Guerrero Media is specifically geared towards executives and executive leaders. And it's about how to use stories and storytelling as a way to identify, reflect on, and interrupt and reimagine the status quo. So this idea of how can we take a story, like one person's singular personal experience, and then use it as an entry point for this conversation. And so the story that we're telling tomorrow is, at its highest level, is about like a young actress who's getting all of these messages about like, this is the way the world is, and this is how you are an actor, and her making choices against that messaging. So we use that story as a way to kind of enter into a conversation around, like, what are the types of things that we see as this is how the world is, right? Or like, that's just how it goes sort of stuff. And then how do we use stories as a way to help us reimagine or push back on that? Because I feel like there's anything that all of us have been talking about for the past 18 months is like, we don't want to go back to normal. Like, normal is not good for anybody.
Yeah, we found out there are other ways. Right.
Yeah. So how do we use that?
So in this particular case, like, is the goal to talk about just the way things were before, or the way things were for women or minorities, or what exactly is the focus?
That's a great, yeah. So the story we are sharing takes place maybe 15 years ago. And Kanisha, who's telling it, is both a woman and a woman of color. Because it is her story, we are certainly entering into it via those lenses, right? That being said, the goal for tomorrow is much more on the higher level than that, right? So it's not specifically about a particular experience or the kind of let's not go back to normal, so much as it is about the practice of using a single story to be able to ask questions. And so though our theme for this one is really thinking about the status quo and what that means and looks like and is, in some ways, what we're hoping is that the actual skill of using a story to enter into a complicated conversation is one of the things that is applicable across all sorts of different topics.
So if this is aimed at like corporations and, on a larger scale, do they expect to come out of this with the knowledge of how to apply that back at their offices or implement some kind of program? What is the outcome? What is the goal?
Yeah, so that's going to be different depending on what kind of program you're talking about, right? So tomorrow's program and our whole Between Two Screens is kind of one of our threads of programming. It's really more about planting seeds, right? So it's about the idea of like, here's a question we can ask ourselves. Here's a thought that we could have. How do I carry this forward? And though there might be very tangible things that come out of it in terms of that is a question that I could then apply across all of these things that I'm doing, right? Or that technique that came up in terms of like, one of the things we're talking about tomorrow is, where does wisdom come from, right? So in Kanisha's story, it feels like she's getting like from her mentors, from her professors, from her agent, is getting a lot of like, this is how this goes, wisdom. But the idea of like, oh, actually we can get wisdom from lots of places, right? We can get wisdom from our peers. We can get wisdom from ourselves. And though that may not be a tangible skill, that is still something to be able to say like, hey, what would it mean to be able to look less hierarchically for wisdom, right? How do I carry that forward into my work? So the Between Two Screens stuff is more thought-provoking, I think is the goal. Whereas some of the programming that we build that is specifically in like equity, diversity, and inclusion training, or is an anti-bias sort of thing, or is a skill building workshop, those are much more, okay, we're trying to communicate this actual technique to you, right? Like, we're trying to teach you how you can use stories to communicate a complicated idea to a non-expert audience, right? So that's something that we're doing with Comcast right now, is this idea of like, they have a whole group of engineers and technicians who need to communicate very complicated, intricate things to people who have no idea what they're talking about, right? So how do I use a story to help create buy-in and communicate this thing that's really complicated, but through a story? So both it's memorable and meaningful to me, even if I don't necessarily understand the kind of the intricacies of it. And that's something that I feel like has a much more tangible, like, this is a skill we're trying to teach you.
They still sound like they would go together, like a follow-up, like something you can say, okay, we've done the overall planting the seeds, but then you get down to the nitty-gritty and maybe do some, you know, I think it's just needed, like, in my opinion, but because these things require change in a system, how much resistance do you see or get?
Woo, that is the question, right? Well, so it totally depends, right? So sometimes there is a lot of resistance, right? And especially in spaces where either, you know, folks are grappling with anti-racist concepts for the very first time, right? Or things where somebody has hired us to come in and deliver content to somebody who is not there willingly, right? Like, those are spaces where there can be quite a lot of initial resistance, I think. And I'll say one of the real blessings of the story approach is that even the most resistant folks still tend to have a really good time, which is kind of surprising when you think about, I mean, I feel like all of us have been in one of those, you know, diversity workshops that you walk out and you're just like, oh God, that was awful, for whatever reason, right? Because the content is hard, because of it's a PowerPoint presentation and it's boring, or because somebody-
Michael Scott did it.
Yeah, or somebody's like facilitating it poorly. And so somebody's having like emotions all over the place and nobody's really taking care of it, whatever it is, right? But we have found, like, there was this one guy who we were talking to after a workshop, and he was like, you know, I really came to that with my knives out. Like, I was ready to fight you.
That's honest. And,
yeah. And at the end, I felt really uplifted. I felt really empowered. I felt really motivated. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I would say is that a story can do that, right? Like, a story, there's something about a story that both specifies something and gives us this opportunity to connect to it and allows us the space to really sit with it as a human being in all of our complexity, right? So, like, I'm there as a woman and a leader and somebody in the nonprofit and also an artist and also a white person and also this, and all of those things can be held by a story in a way that I think, you know, information and lectures and stuff sometimes can't hold that complexity.
Yeah, and you know, it reminds me of, I don't know if you recall the author, he's now passed away, Frank McCourt. He wrote Angela's Ashes, and he was a school teacher in like a really tough high school in New York City. And I never forgot this part of his book where he talked about, you know, he grew up in very, you know, poor conditions. He was from a very poor family, so they rarely had anything to eat. But as an adult, and he was a teacher going to teach at this school, the students started to resist, like, oh, I don't want to learn literature. What is this? You know, and a kid threw a bologna sandwich at him. And so what he did was he picked it up and took a bite and he ate it. And then he, you know, proceeded to tell them about how they would have killed for a piece of bread. And, you know, that was the last time the kid threw any sandwiches at him. I think they would give him sandwiches after that. But just the way that he related his story, instead of being angry, and became like one of them, but then he was able to tell his story and teach and do his job. And, you know, that's how I kind of imagine this system, where you're connecting with them at their under level, like, hey, I've been there, or that's not so unusual that it would happen to you, you know, this, or, you know, a lot of comics use that self-deprecating humor and it connects you to them, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's such a vast subject. It gets me so excited because I feel like there's so many spaces that need this type of education and training. So yeah.
Well, and that bologna sandwich example is such a great just such a great example of why stories matter, right? Because I don't know how long ago you read that, but it wasn't yesterday, you know? Right. And so the fact that you still remember both the setup for it, right? I'm very poor, I grew up very poor, and therefore, and also the moment of it, like that means it was really sticky, right? Like it has stuck in your brain for that long. And if we can use stories to, if we can attach stories to some of these different concepts that are A, really hard to wrap your mind around if you haven't grappled with them, right? So like extreme poverty for one, right, or not being able to have food. Like I imagine that there are lots of people in the world, myself included, like I've certainly had moments when I've been hungry, but I've never had a moment where I go and open my refrigerator and there's literally no food right. in it, right?
Right.
And so like how can a story help me understand what that is like and therefore help me make priorities or choices around that particular thing?
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's so much opportunity to finding the spaces in between the conversations that are so hard to have with each other and to put story into that.
There's a completely different experience of issues and ideas when those are expressed through narrative, and when they're expressed through humor, and when they're expressed through image. And it's not a clamor to be right. It is a desire to be heard and felt and understood.
With our equity, diversity, inclusion work, it's not about shaming, it's about empowering folks to recognize the humans around them and to show up in those spaces. And with our workshops and facilitations, it's not about like, we're the experts and super great. It's like, we're experts, but surprise, so are you. You are a storyteller, and this is how you do this more often and every day in the work that you do. And when you do it, you will be a person who can build community better.
So just recently, not too long ago, I love Dave Sedaris. He's a great writer. I respect his work. But recently, I don't know, it was something that was like going through YouTube where I don't know if it was a TED talk or something, but he was talking about microaggressions. And he was not defending people who are offended by microaggressions. Actually, he was on the other side, which surprised me. He says that people are too sensitive. What do you think of that?
Oh God, you know. Okay, so that makes me think of a couple of things. First of all, it makes me think about the comedy adage about punching up versus punching down. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but basically the idea is that it is quote unquote okay to punch up and it is not okay to punch down. So the idea of, if I think about power structures, right, either real or perceived power structures, that me punching up, me making jokes about people who are up the ladder from me.
Stick it to the man.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Versus me making jokes about people who are further down the ladder,
right?
And so in some ways that to me smells a little bit like he's punching down, right? So that's one thing that comes to mind for me. Another thing is that I think one of the great disservices that we have done ourselves as a culture is labeling feelings as bad, right? And labeling the idea that, like, what does that mean, too sensitive? You know, like I would imagine there's a part of me that feels like I've recently decided that if I don't cry like once a day, I'm not really living, you know? And that's just about like feeling things, right? So whether it's reading an article or it's a book or seeing something or somebody says something to me, but this idea of like, we have culturally decided that somehow feelings are bad, right? Like feelings are not professional, feelings are dangerous. And some of that I think is because we also treat feelings as truth as opposed to information, right? So one of the things that I do a lot in group agreements, especially in these tough spaces, is the idea that feelings are great information.
That is such a great way to look at it. It's like you're an investigator and you're like, okay, what's the evidence here? You know, you're an investigator looking at the whole case and you're like, some of this information is important because we need to know what they're feeling before this action or to avoid or to prevent an action.
And about ourselves, right? Like, oh, wow, I'm feeling really angry right now. What is that about, right? And sometimes it's because I haven't eaten and I'm hungry or I'm dehydrated. And sometimes it's because like, oh, I feel really scared and therefore I'm protecting myself with this anger.
Right.
So those are, I mean, a bunch of thoughts. I don't know that it's necessarily my place or quite frankly, anybody's place to decide from moment to moment if somebody's being too sensitive about a microaggression, right?
Yeah, it's a very, it's not a topic that you can just dismiss in one sentence or one response, you know, if he was told.
Yeah, for and example, a lot of time.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I've also, like, we actually did one of these between two screens conversations about microaggressions a couple months ago. And one of the things that kept coming up is the idea that microaggressions is a misnomer. Right? Because it implies that they are small. It implies that they are not important. And in actuality, for folks who are experiencing microaggressions, for lack of a better term right now, sometimes they're happening 20, 30, 50 times a day, right? And that's an incredibly huge burden to carry. So the fact that a person is being quote unquote too sensitive about one thing in one moment, I'm like, fuck that noise. That person should be sensitive. That is something they should not have to tolerate.
I didn't know what was happening to me when I was younger. When I look back, I see it so much. I see how it happens so much. I have always worked in the legal field as a paralegal. That's my day job. but back when I was really young, one of the attorneys I worked for, I had a typo, and instead of policy, I wrote police. Instead of policy number, I wrote police number. And it just so happened that the guy was Hispanic, right? The guy that was the subject of the letter. And he said, do you know this guy? Does he have a record? Is he a troublemaker? Do you know him? So he was trying to do like his little Freud analysis on me.
Right.
And I was like, no, I don't know all the Hispanic people in Detroit. I used to live in Detroit. And I just kind of blew it off. But then I thought later on, it's like, that is really bad. That is really bad.
Yeah, exactly.
It's taking it to an extreme.
Well, and also to your point about, I didn't even realize until I was looking back what was happening. And I feel like that's true for a lot of people, that either it has become so normal that they have a shield up and they ignore it, right?
You learn how to skirt around. You learn how to maneuver and skirt around and stay out of uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, which is so much energy.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of energy.
Yeah. So what are the plans? Is this going to continue with second story? How big is this getting? Tell me everything.
Yeah, well, so I mentioned earlier that, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, people would just kind of roll up and be like, hey, do you do this thing? And we say, sure, we do that thing. And then about, let's say like 8 or 10 years ago, we started kind of officially doing things for hire, right? So we would do shows for hire, we would do workshops for hire. And then about 5 years ago, we started to really think about it as an income driver. So there's a whole bunch of things that we are focusing on organizationally, things like pay equity that require income, you know? And so we started to think about like, okay, so what are the assets that we have that we can offer to the world? And this work, this what we called Second Story for Hire at the time, rose straight to the top, right? Because it is one of those things that though we were not marketing it specifically, every client that we worked with would come back and say, that was amazing, that was incredible. We've never had anything like that. Would you do it again? So we have formalized that program and now call it Culture Builds, which is this kind of the name of that particular stream of programming at Second Story. We have been for about 3 years now working on the actual kind of scaffolding of that program, the program creation and contents, staffing for it. So we just hired a full-time person. And then about a year ago, really right before the pandemic started, kind of officially launched.
Okay.
And it has grown exponentially, even during the pandemic. So it's been really not surprising, but still kind of surprising in the so far as like, we know it's really good. And also we have not really done any marketing around it. It's all been word of mouth, which I think in some ways is the best kind of marketing, right? So we haven't been doing anything formal in terms of like cold calls and that kind of stuff. And yet our client base keeps growing and growing and growing. So,
well, yeah, I think the pandemic kind of opened a lot of eyes to what changes need to be made in the workplace. And it, even just, you know, looking back a year ago with the George Floyd death and just things that have happened during the year that have made cultural awareness just, you know, on top of mind. I think, you know, companies, corporations, organizations, firms need to allot a budget for this type of training. Yeah, it needs to be just, it's a given, like it needs to be there.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, I think you're right that it's been interesting that I would say that it's one of those that things like professional development or like employee recognition, these kinds of things have frequently already been in people's budgets. And then in the past 12 months or so, things that were like, oh, we should really do that diversity thing, we should really do that thing, are now actually being funded, right?
Yeah.
Which is a huge moment, certainly for like organizations like us, but more importantly, it feels like it's really a moment for, like, it feels like we are riding a surge right now. And that if we can actually really peel back some layers and look at what's happening underneath all of this stuff, look at the stories underneath, right?
Look at the stories, exactly.
Yeah, look at our history and really try and grapple with some of the systemic things that need to be handled. And though Second Story has a very kind of person-based approach, the thing that I was just saying the other day is this idea that, yes, we need to address systems, and also systems that are made up of people. And the systems aren't going to change themselves, right? So the thing that has to happen is we need to have enough people who are all chomping at the bit to change these systems. And that's the way it will happen. So it's not just, you know, the interpersonal stuff. It's not necessarily addressing microaggressions. That's a part of it for sure. Mm-hmm. But really being able to get the, get people energized mm-hmm. about actually tackling some of these things.
Right.
Because that's those people making all of those choices all at the same time is what will actually cause systemic change.
That is so great. And where do people go, like, to say, hey, I want to do this for my company, can I get a quote? Like, where do they get that information from?
Yeah, the internet. God bless the internet, right? They can find it on our website, which is at culturebuilds.com. We also have a Second Story has a website. But yeah, email is a great way. We also are doing events all of the time. And though some of them are performances, it's still a really great way to see the kinds of stories that Second Story does. So we have a whole bunch of events happening in June. We're doing a collaboration with Lawrence Hall around Pride Month, and doing another of these kind of between two screens panel conversations, then and show.
I can see these becoming office outings. Like, you know, sometimes offices have like these outings to like an after, you know, work social. I can see that these becoming part of that schedule that, hey, we're having an outing, but it's a fun night where we're going to watch some storytelling. And, you know, it's just really inspiring to be able to connect people that way and do it in a non-traditional way. It's time to break the status quo and just like, say, let's do it a different way. That's not working anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've done a couple of those. Like we did an end of year celebration for Motorola. That was a like, hey, we'd love to just throw a party for our people all around the world. So we told stories and had live music. And it was exactly what you're talking about. This kind of like employee event.
That's great.
So, yeah. It's a pretty, awesome. It's pretty fun.
That is so awesome. Well, I really congratulate you. When I saw this on the message about doing this interview, and I said, second story, what? What's going on? And started digging into it. And I was like, this is so exciting. This is like the natural evolving of what needed to happen with these stories. You know, they were nice, you know, they're right there, but oh, wow, now other people get to witness these and integrate them into their lives. You know, if you're like me and my poor daughters who are, you know, grew up going to poetry readings and poetry meetings with me, that's nice for, you know, some of us, but to be able to bring it to this level is just amazing. And so I really applaud you guys for that. I know you've been working really hard to get it to this point. So congratulations.
Thank you. I'm so charmed by the fact that you saw one of our shows a million years ago.
Oh, I know. I loved it. It was so great.
I'm charmed by that.
I miss those days of going to, I used to go to La Bruquena too, and we had like open mic there, just like different events like that. And I miss like the writing workshops that we did around our area, but I can't wait till we're back out and just doing that again, face to face. It's going to be so much fun.
Yes.
And I hope somebody that I'm associated with, either my employer or an organization, will implement what you're doing, because I'm definitely going to tell them about it. And I
wonderful.
Think it'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd love that. Well, we have all of these online shows too. And for each of them, we have public access tickets. So free tickets. I mean, you can also buy tickets, but it's one of those things that we do not want finances to be a barrier. So especially if you're trying to cultivate folks, right? Mm-hmm. We can just sign them up for free tickets and you all can watch a show together. And it's all like, we're all online. So it's very put my feet up, wear my PJs, pour myself a glass of wine, kind of like watch.
Very convenient. Room. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And you know, no excuses.
Yeah.
Unless you can binge Netflix, you can do this. Yeah. So, well, thank you, Amanda. Thank you for sharing with me. I want to say thank you for being here on the Queso podcast, where I try to really focus on culture with language, just stories. That's like my theme, just stories, like people telling their story and opening our eyes and opening the possibilities.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.